Welcome to the Data Able podcast, where Dave Mathias talks with experts across the world about leveraging data to deliver amazing insights, products, and experiences.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Data Able. This is Dave Mathias, and I am excited to be talking with you today. Now, I'll give you a little background before getting to the episode today. First of all, okay, this was recorded on a Friday afternoon, so realize maybe didn't have the highest amount of energy as I should have had, so apologize for that from the start. At the same time, it's a topic that I am really passionate about, and certainly a lot of things that I do are around coaching and training and trying to do it in an applied sense. And so one of the things that we talk a lot about are around this type of applied learning, because Jansen and Victor, they have a company up in Toronto and they focus more on the technical side of data teams, and they do that applied learning. Well, certainly at Beyond the Data, we focus more on more business side persons, or when it's technical side people, it tends to be more on the soft skills or success skills of those individuals. But again, always in that applied instance. And so really, we're both passionate on how education has been done and how it can be done better. So that's certainly one of those topics that we talk about. But love to get your take too, because a lot of people are undergoing different forms of education, whether it's through their kids, whether it's something where they're experiencing because they're trying to level up while you're at home. Love to hear what has been going great or what hasn't been going so great. And of course, you can email me at dave@gobeyondthedata.com and let me know about that. Speaking of training, I actually have some upcoming training, and you can always check out all of our training at gobeyondthedata.eventbrite.com, or just go to our website at gobeyondthedata.com. One of the things really excited about is the upcoming Data Storytelling Bootcamp, which starts in October. And it's a 5-week bootcamp, part-time cohort model that's interactive, but of course virtual, because you know what? We're not going to be in person. Okay, enough about that though. Getting into one of the things that how I had met Jansen through a service called Lunch Club. And I wanted to let you know about this because I think it's something you might benefit from in COVID times. So Lunch Club, or their website's lunchclub.ai, is a service where they match you up with like-minded folks, whether it's you're looking for other folks in product or data or other some other interest, some community cause, whatever it is. They'll try to match you up based on a few of the things that you have identified so that there's good connection with that other person. You have a good conversation. And in that conversation, it's a video conference. Every conversation's been fun and interesting. Highly recommend it. And if you're looking for a way to get out there, check it out. It's lunchclub.ai. There's no paid promotion to do this. I had benefit out of it and I wanted to share with you. And I want to thank Jasmine Rukim, who is a former guest of the podcast. And she's the one who actually introduced me to it. So thank you, Jasmine, for doing. The other thing to mention before getting going today is this is actually a dual podcast recording, because Jansen and Victor, they have their own podcast called All Things Data. There's actually a couple of those out there. So obviously, this is the Data Able podcast. So we are doing a cross podcast that we both thought was a topic that we were both passionate about. And so we thought it would be an episode that'd be good for both of our audiences. Do recommend you check out their All Things Data podcast and subscribe to that. And we'll, of course, have that linked in the show notes. And, of course, thank you for listening to Data Able. So now let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to the All Things Data podcast, combined edition. We're here actually with Dave Mathias, the Data Able podcast host. So we're combining our podcast this week.
Awesome. Great to be with you. We're socially distanced between Minneapolis and Toronto, so we're good there.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, thanks for joining, and thanks for setting all this up too. I know it was a bit of back and forth, but we get to use some new podcast tech, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's always good fun, and talking about leading edge things. So we're going to talk a little data education, a little analytics education, but tell us more about what you're about, and I'll do the same and maybe go back and forth a little bit there and then go into the analytics education.
1000ML really started as a data consultancy way back in the day. And as we kept going, we noticed very quickly that all the people that we'd hire or work with and whatnot, it's not that they necessarily lack data literacy altogether, but they didn't have the calluses of a data professional who's been in the world for a very long right. time. And we're purporting to be excellent data people, whatever that data people means. It could be data scientist or analyst or AI practitioner, whatever. And we kept creating programs such that we would take them from entry level, emerging, or what have you, and make them into fully fledged and fully rounded data practitioners that were super useful to us. And very quickly, we found that a lot of our contemporaries in the community really wanted some of our staff and wanted what we were doing. And it was a bit of a moat that we were building around the business that allowed us to scale and have, lower operational costs across the board. So that led us to a world of, let's create this for other people as well. And let's make the product the people that we're training up. So that was the crux of 1000ML. And we keep doing consultancy work and project work and product work because we have a dearth of data practitioners that come through. And a lot of them are great that we want to keep them. So we keep the ones that we really want around at times when we have projects for them specifically. And if not, we help get them placed into jobs somewhere in the community. And now it's actually been worldwide, really.
Cool. That's almost like a sort of a apprenticeship-like model, where it's a hand-in-hand learning together, little old school that's coming back more in popularity in some different cases, right?
That's right. Well, and I think we're big proponents of hands-on, and learning from textbooks is great, I think, theoretically, but at the end of the day, employers and ourselves, we want people that can do things and actually operate and execute. So we think that the fastest way to learn, especially in the data world, there's a lot, it's trial and error. It's a lot of like experimentation and tinkering around. So we encourage people to do that. And that's the way we deliver curriculum also.
Cool. That's very cool. And somewhat, even though we both saw problems in the spaces we're in, we sort of both saw some problems in different areas, I think. And so for us, we focus on more the business side of data and the challenges that are there. So less the data scientists or folks like that, and more the product managers, the finance person, the marketing person, the HR person, and getting that data literacy up across the board, along with some of those more success skills for the technical people. But we don't really get into the more rigorous training of more technical people other than some of those success skills. So I think we have some overlap, but we also have some differences where we're playing in.
Yeah, for sure. And we keep noticing all across the board, data literacy is very top of mind for a huge number of organizations. I don't know if it was catalyzed really because of COVID and the pandemic and people working from home quite a bit and having to do more, maybe stretch themselves a little more than they had in the past. But we keep running into conversations over and over and over again with all kinds of organizations who are, basically telling us we are not literate enough and we really need to understand what kind of insights and what kind of power data really has.
Yeah. I was, in fact, actually recording another Data Able episode just this morning with the chief data officer of a company out east that's sort of like a medium-sized software B2B type company. And him and I were chatting and on this data literacy front is one of the components and really the data translator role and data storytelling role. And he looks at it as there's going to be those folks that are uber technical and that are really good at diving in and being the really strong data scientists. And then there's this huge number of people that are going to be data storytellers, data visualization, data literacy, and just with really strong domain expertise. How do you get more of that? I just got off the phone with somebody that's looking to make a career change, and she's done a lot of things. In fact, she was actually working for the Canadian Consulate at one point here in Minneapolis. And we were chatting on the first thing that she picked up, because she was like, I want to, leverage my creativity, but I also like the field of analytics. And I was thinking about data storytelling and data visualization. So the first thing she picked up was a Coursera Python course. And I was like, okay, I don't know if that's the first thing that you want to like dive into. I mean, that's great, like if you're curious, but how do you, especially because you get a lot of folks that are career changers, right? And how do you help educate and transition somebody that's maybe a career changing type of person where they weren't, let's say they want to jump into the very technical or maybe right. even more of an analyst or a data scientist versus like somebody that's coming out of school or they're pretty young in their career?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Like first off, I think it's the hype of marketing. So the idea, everyone's saying like data scientist, Python, these are all the sexy things you need to be doing. And sometimes they're just not, that's not the thing they need, you know? And I think it's, you're right by just kind of asking the questions. And it's not necessarily coaching, but just kind of informing people that there are other roles outside of data scientist that are in the data world. But, you know, once you kind of get past that, I think a person who's been in the industry for a while, career change, but it doesn't necessarily mean industry change, right? So these, you know, folks who've been in the game for a while and seen the problems that occur in their industry or at their business are extremely valuable, right? I mean, it's like taking someone who's a great operator and then adding the data layer onto them, right? So they know a lot of things that, you know, people like the general population don't know. So they can apply that kind of specialist lens. And usually what I tell those folks are just like, or I'll ask them questions around the idea of like, what kind of problems do you see, or what kind of questions would you like to answer if you had all the data in the world type of thing. And then go try and solve that. You know,
that makes perfect sense. I think people that oftentimes want to do these career changes, there's this article I'm still waiting to publish. It's talking about the whole unicorns view of data scientists and product management.
Right.
I think both of those roles have this misconception of this is just like the roles, the two type of roles that are so sought after nowadays, other than being like the billionaire entrepreneur, right? So I think that the question is really, what's motivating? Why do you want to be that role? What do you see your skill sets that line there? And like, what's your passion? I think too many people are driven by the hype nowadays, and we think, oh, I can learn anything in a weekend or in a boot camp. And certainly some boot camps you can learn a lot, but that's only going to be like the very cursory level of your career. As to be good at anything, it takes lots of time to be that polished, whatever it is.
People are often drawn just by the salary numbers that they see or have read in, you know, some magazine, some publication, The Economist, whatever it is, right? And they're like, oh, wow, data scientists make so much money. That's exactly what I need to do. And it's also future-proofing me. So they jump in and think, well, I'm going to be a great data scientist, especially at the entry level, where it's really tough to get hired as a data scientist right out of school. And it's really tough to get hired without the real experience. So oftentimes, these people need to think through, well, how do I get my foot in the door and do something that is, you know, very close to or adjacent to data science and work my way into that data science workflow as soon as I possibly can. So I demonstrate value and they give me more responsibility.
I think it's also understanding the roles. Like data science is one of those things that, you know, it's one of those terms where you could just say like IT or developer. There's so many things. You could be in research, so you're just looking in models. You could be in the engineering side where you're productionizing. You could be in the analysis side, right? So, I mean, it all depends what you want to know. And I think data science is this like catch-all term, but, you know, we're seeing this now where you're getting new role titles or new specialization titles of like machine learning engineers, data science researcher, data science analyst, things like that. So I think people don't know what they're getting into. So they're just like immediate, I'm taking Python. So they don't know the type of problems they want to be solving or like what they want to actually be doing. They just know that it's data is the new gold and I need to go mine for it.
Yeah, that's a great point. So for you guys, when you're talking with somebody initially that first time, what are the key questions that you're asking them to understand, okay, what is this person's motivations and how much do I want to invest in? Because you're with an apprenticeship type model, that's a fairly significant effort from your end and also from their end. And certainly if they're not doing great work, it reflects on you, especially when you're doing like the consulting type work. Tell me a little bit of how that process goes.
Well, generally to look at quality and ensure that we keep quality high, we generally work them through, the model is we work them through a ton of projects all the way through this experiential learning over a longer period than a boot camp would. All the while, they're also being mentored. So we have staff mentors who sit by the wayside. So it's not a self-led program. That would be pretty crazy to try to get people to really do that. That's more akin to a fellowship, and that usually works or can work for postgraduate degrees. But if you're, and I don't want to belittle it, but if you're a lowly bachelor degree or even an honors bachelor, you are possibly not of the same rigor and critical thinking that somebody with a postgraduate degree might have. So you need a little bit more handholding and a little bit more showing you the way. So you were completely right at the start where you sort of juxtaposed it to an apprenticeship, because that's really how we work it. It's the mentor is the one who's paid well and is really in charge of delivery along with an account manager for our projects. And we give it the rigor and professionalism that we do on the consulting side. It's just that much like if you were talking about Deloitte or Accenture or any of these big consulting houses, you generally don't get the most expensive people doing all the work for you. They're usually the network and they're the ones selling you the work rather than actually producing all the deliverables. They often will package it up and give it to you at the end so that it does have a professional sheen to it. But the majority of the work is often insourced to the, I guess, the junior staff that we have.
Yeah, the lower, it's all about billability at that point, right? Where you're billing out at higher rates, but you're having juniors take on that, take on those roles. But I think in terms of like questions, like where the types of folks that we want, was that the original question?
Yeah, it was just when you're trying to identify, is this a person that I want to take on at the beginning? Because I think that's a big commitment on your end to go down that path.
And I think the big thing is that the questions I am most, I guess, concerned about, like you can pass a quick math test, you can pass, you know, those, we can test you technically, but it's the curious folks. It's the people who are wanting to dig, the people who aren't afraid to make mistakes, the people that are a little less risk adverse, I guess. But the people who are willing to try things out, like you can have a lot of practitioners. Like, I mean, we're not looking for unicorns and we're not looking for people who are necessarily like great orators, great storytellers, plus great technicians, plus you can't always find that stuff. So we do look for people more around the idea of like curiosity and people who are willing to learn. So, I mean, there's a lot of questions around that where you can just ask people how they would figure something out. You know, just, I want to see how you think through problems. And people who can admit and just say like things like, you know what, I don't know, but I'll go find out, versus trying to BS your way through something to make yourself like an authority. But it's around the idea of just being an explorer and like okay with not coming up with the right answer right away. Because I mean, at the end of the day, data science and data analysis and technology and stuff, it's a lot of exploration. It's a lot of trial and error. You don't know the answer up front a lot of the time. So you kind of go in half knowing, and then you'll figure it out along the way. But I mean, you do have methodologies and frameworks that you work through, but it's not like a typical engineering problem where you know what you're going to do. You're just like, here's the problem. You know, I need to make code, or I need to make a bridge, or I need to whatever. These are the constraints I work in. And then I just kind of build it out, you know?
Makes a lot of sense. And so one of the things I've seen a lot, I mean, certainly there's tons of universities, and we had chatted on this a little bit before, where there's so many universities doing so many programs in this space, whether it's data science or analyst or engineer or whatever you want to call it, different programs, and a lot at the master's level or boot camps, even things like that. If you had the power to go into in that type of program, how would you change maybe one of your local universities and adapt their program? Would you try to do the whole program as an apprenticeship model, or how would you sort of restructure a university's education in the space?
Well, I guess one thing is that universities aren't really open to the idea of, traditionally anyways, are open to the idea of like apprenticeship. It's very, everyone's going to say experiential learning, but I find a lot of, like, some universities are doing this decently where they're having more of like applied or co-op programs and stuff, but actually to teach it, I think it's, they need to be taking more like case-based learning, bringing in real problems and real data sets, not just like, here's a public data set of 5,000 records perfectly formatted. So you can do this piece of analysis. It's like, you have to understand the rigors of doing these things and going through the pain of data. The data engineering and the wrangling and stuff. But the thing is, that should be a course, because right now the way university teaches is in discrete chunks, right? You would take a data engineering course, then you would take a data science course, then you might take like a model course, and then, but at in the real world, all of those are combined to solve a problem, right? It's like taking a course in cooking, but instead of cooking, you just take a chopping course. Then the next course you take is just a boiling course. And then the next course you take is a frying course. Like, that's not how you cook, right? You cook all, you have to take all the skills at once. So that's my thought. Like, if you were to do something, it's more of like, you might spend a semester solving a problem and going in and working with industry to do it. How about yourself? I'm going to flip that back to you.
Yeah, I would like to have a lot more experiential, and I think all learning, well, so there's the master's level versus the bachelor's level. I would separate that out a little bit. I think a lot of the master's level learning that I've seen is so focused on checking boxes that are perceived to be important in organizations and checking as many boxes. It's sort of the quantity over the quality, that I get good at a couple of things and identify what those people are passionate about, what they're good at. Like you say, we're not trying to create unicorns here. So I think for me, it would be spending a lot of time at the beginning to really know the student, and then designing an education that's going to be good for that person, him or her, that is going to have a significant experiential component. I'm not against some of those courses that are going to, you know, help get you along. But I think it's also the same thing as, like, I'm not against doing the hackathons or those type of things. And like, those data hackathons are great. They're good energy, things like that. But it's not a point to a normal project that you're going to do. Just like, if you want to do KO competitions, hey, great, go do it. But you don't have that interaction with the business and that asking questions and those types of things that, if you're a data scientist or data analyst, are such core features. So bring in real projects. The tough thing is, and in fact, one of the universities just was reached out to me saying, hey, we're looking for companies to do part of this capstone. We had a couple of companies drop out and we need some companies to fill in, and asked if I knew anyone. But it's the capstone project, right? It's the last thing that the students get to do. And it's like, hey, like, actually really apply it. Well, I think maybe that first semester, there should be understanding where those gaps are for those individuals and what that person's good at, and then trying to accelerate them as they're doing multiple of those types of capstones throughout the effort. Now, I also think the other question is on domain knowledge. Like, if students are coming in with a significant amount of domain knowledge, they're going in a master's program and they have 10 years of domain experience in healthcare or in oil and gas or somewhere like that, that's a very different perspective and how you can lean in with that student and how education should be versus, okay, this person's just sort of very much on the pathfinding. I would question whether master's makes sense for those students so too.
Yeah. And I think one thing is that they really understand, like, when you've been in the workforce for a while, you're more sensitive to your learning needs, right? When you're coming out of school, you're just learning to learn. You're still in that kind of like headspace where you're like, I'll learn anything. You know, it's not as targeted or focused. But yeah, as an adult, like a more mature learner, you know why you're there. You know what you're kind of taking stuff for the next steps for the most part.
Yeah, that's a great point. So have you seen anyone else doing, so the apprenticeship model obviously has a long history in many different forms, and certainly there has been more of the emphasis on boot camps and things like that, but have you seen anyone else sort of taking on the charge, something similar to what you're doing in other areas of the world that you're feeling happy that things are progressing? Because the tough thing is scale, right? Like, the model you're doing from a scale perspective, it's tough unless a lot of people sort of buy into this type of approach and make things better.
We haven't seen anyone else doing this model, not necessarily just in our backyard. We don't know anyone in Canada that's doing this, but we also don't know anyone really globally doing this. But there are folks who are doing this in other verticals, right? So, you know, there's sales and operations, people that are doing this for startups. I believe there's like a marketing one that's similar. So I think this model just lends itself to the times right now. People are looking, you know, if you're looking at job experience, data science is not a first job. So if you see this as data scientists, there's always like the 2 to 5 year experience type of gap there. So, or request even for juniors. So how do you have a junior that has 2 to 5 years? That's not a junior anymore. Mm-hmm. So I feel that data science like is being viewed as this like transitionary or transition type of career where you started out as an analyst, then someone at your company gave you a shot and you move up into data science, typically. But scale's another issue, I guess. Like for us, we're looking to validate the model. I think it's been validated. Scale will be, you know, kind of the next problem that we tackle. But I don't think this model is not scalable. I mean, it's like boot camps. I think we're at the same scale problems where it's, you need instructors and you need, you know, mentors. Like we call them mentors because we look at this as more as a mentorship program. And you still need people to deliver it. You know, this isn't a Coursera, like where you're just watching videos. I think that is that's a model for certain people, right? I mean, I think different learning methodologies are for different folks. I mean, some people need the in-class, some people need a person, some people just want to do it on their own, right? Some people need books, some people need videos, some people, you know, need problems. So we're going after the people that want the experiential learning, not just like the classroom stuff.
Is there anything that you've seen out of COVID or other things recently that make you excited or think that there might be finally a push to have better disruption in the education space?
For me, I think it's largely been just sort of the backlash against universities generally, and I'm sure you've seen it as well. Like students are all up in arms as to why am I paying you this ridiculous tuition at this point for nearly the same value that I would get from some online learning platform, whatever that is, right? So I think there's a bit of disruption coming. I think the model has largely been flawed, not quite broken, for quite a long time. And in a world of capitalism, like it really has been, it's a business, let's go make money, rather than in a very altruistic way, let's do the best for the student, right? So I think it's very plausible that we see a shakeup in it, but I don't know that the entrenched colleges and universities are going to largely change unless they're losing money. So it's all a money game for them. And we'll have to see how this all shakes out in the next, I don't know, 3 to 6 or 9 months or however long they're, you know, not allowing students into the halls of these higher learning institutions.
So what are you most hopeful about with education, the data science or the analytics space?
I think a big thing that we're seeing is just data literacy. People are starting to really kind of put money into it, or I shouldn't say people, companies are starting to put money into it. They're seeing it as not a competitive advantage anymore, but they're seeing it as table stakes. It's, I don't want to say, you know, sound alarmist and saying like, this is do or die, but for companies to move forward and kind of be modern or modernized, you need data to drive that way. And that doesn't mean that everyone at your company needs to be a data scientist, but it's that ability to use data to make decisions, ability to interpret data, the ability to form arguments with data, you know, the ability to discuss data. And it's not, I think it's inherent to everybody. I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm so bad with data, I don't know this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, I'm like, if you can look at your grocery receipt and tell me, how much did you spend on vegetables? You can do that. And you've just done data analysis. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where I think it just needs to be reframed. And I think a lot of people are doing it every day. I think everyone's doing it every day. You just don't know that you're doing it. And taking that in and applying it to the business context, right? And just like how you're making decisions, how decisions are being formed, right? Not just making the decision, but like, why am I making this decision? And then getting into that idea of like evidence and using any of that information to, you know, help you drive your business a little further. So I'm really excited that companies are, you know, investing into that or looking into it at least. Like it's conversation now, at least. And universities are pushing for this, like the academic side of it, which is like machine learning. You're seeing a lot more of these like master's degrees in analytics and whatnot. I mean, I don't know if they're good or not, but universities are jumping on the trend and that bandwagon, and that it's pushing the profile and people are aware of it and people are talking about it. So I think that's important, even just being able to have the conversation about it. So I think it's a good thing. I think if you're digitally native, we've talked about this on our own podcast, but if you're digitally native, this is an important thing to look at when you're forming companies, and companies that are doing it right off the bat are growing at exponential rates. Like those are the companies that are you know, killing it because they're able to use data right from the get-go.
That's a great point. And certainly, I think the sort of yes-anding that is, I'm a big fan of improv, is more leaders are even willing to start asking those questions and get a little bit better with data literacy. And I'm surprised at how many leaders are, although getting to, I've had a couple executives recently say, hey, do you know a good Python class I could take? Which I'm always like, okay, like, tell me more. Why are you, is it just total mental curiosity? But I think there's at least just a broader recognition of the importance of this, like you say, across the board and just taking a step back. Although one thing I've wondered with COVID is, because you would think that, hey, we're looking at more visualizations and data and things like that just on a normal basis, I think from the general public, and at least more journalists and things are at least appear to be talking about it. But I do wonder, do you think COVID is a good representation of where that has helped push data literacy forward? Or do you think this is maybe some of the evidences of some of the shortcomings of data literacy in our society?
That's a really good question. I think COVID, it's interesting because there's data coming out about COVID all the time and it's being pushed to the public, but I don't think you can convince people who don't want to be convinced. So, I mean, there's people who are looking at the numbers and interpreting them and trying to do things from them. And then there's certain folks that know that numbers exist, but they don't care about them, you know? So I think that the conversations around COVID for the folks that care about the numbers are starting to become more interesting. I think that you can use that information to help educate the public and actually boost the profile of data literacy and inspire others. And I think that inspiration comes especially at like the youth. I don't know if you can change adults' minds, you know what I mean? But the young and impressionable ones can still do it, and the ones that want to do something about it. But I don't think it's necessarily boosting the profile, but it's giving you data to work with that's relevant and usable and to have conversations about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it certainly makes sense. But I do think most people are not in the camp that don't want to be convinced. I think oftentimes we think people don't want to be convinced, but really it's because we're maybe coming at them with a message presented in a form that seems to either be talking down to people or not really seeking their understanding, but basically dictating what the answer is. So one of the things I think, though, when we look at COVID that really comes out is that there's just a lot of data and a lot of uncertainty. And even with the experts, you hear a lot of disagreement take place. And so understanding data and where that data is being gotten, what that data really speaks to and what it doesn't speak to, are challenging for experts, let alone the general public and certainly journalists and others. And so I think one of the things that this teaches us is, A, we're certainly needing more data literacy than we have currently, not only by us, but also by our experts. And B, we really need to be thinking about what type of data do we collect and how do we collect it? And what is that process and how is that communicated out to the public? So if there's one lesson we can learn from this is to be more prepared ahead of time and use data ahead of time to be proactive instead of reactive, because we know from System 1 and System 2, Thinking or Thinking Fast and Slow, the research that Kahneman and Tversky did, that we aren't so great in the moment and making decisions. And when our emotions get involved, and anytime you're having to clean up messes instead of getting prepared for potential messes, we know that, you know, simply it's just going to be a lot less expensive. And so there's a lot of stuff we could have done and we could do in the future to minimize such pandemics, and that from actually basically shutting down our society for as long as it has, or cause dramatic impacts, even in areas of the world where it hasn't been as impactful. And so hopefully we learn from those lessons and we make changes, and that's the best we can do. Certainly we can't change the past, but hopefully we'll learn from our mistakes and capitalize them in the future, along with, of course, being better data literate professionals ourselves, whether it's journalists, whether it's politicians, or whether it's the general public.
I think it's a big thing with your leadership too. I mean, not your leadership being like the American leadership, but maybe that is a thing. But I think the important thing is that people, showing people that, you know, to trust data, and showing people how to use data to come up to their own conclusions. But for people to be completely dismissive of it and say like, that's not true, it's like, well, what can, you know, like, what are you going to say? Like, you can't really say anything to folks like that. But I think, you know, I'm a big fan of American News, and I watch it every day. But the interesting thing is that the current administration seems like they pick and choose the data that they want to use, but then completely ignore everything else. So it's weird, right? Like, they're saying, don't listen to the data, except the data I give you. So I think it's just having that ability to cut through what anyone is saying, look at the evidence, and then ingest it and do it, come to your own conclusion about it. But at least you can have a conversation with that.
I think you make a good point when you're mentioning about really trying to find data to come to the conclusions that you want. And certainly this is a problem that we face in organizations all the time. And I don't think this is unique now or was in the past or will be in the future. I think this is just going to be something you're going to face. And the more data literacy that people have, the better they'll be able to identify and be better at minimizing this occurring. But I don't think it's going to stop this from happening. What are your thoughts, Victor?
I believe that a lot of the OG visualizers and, I guess, data scientists, they're not really scientists, but I guess, you know, it's largely visualizers, are data journalists, whether or not they have the rigor of a scientist, that's to be determined. But the news media, for a very long time, has always put this stuff together, rightly or wrongly, and again, with a bias or a lens towards whatever they believe in a little bit more. Or whatever their bosses believe in, I guess, a little bit more. But that world has existed and permeated within society for a very long time. And I feel like we've all missed an opportunity all throughout to really shine a light on them a bit and be like, this is some of the cool stuff that can happen from the data world. And it's not necessarily going to be all AI all the time, all neural networks, all deep learning. Right. You're not going to get into AGI with everything you do. Very often, describing things really well, and even at the level of counting things really well, is a really good story to tell. And people often get blinded by the sexiness of whatever the newest image recognition is, or whatever the newest NLP model is, when those are very hard things to achieve and get to. And you need an army of people, PhDs, infrastructure, all the stuff that goes around it to really do that kind of work. Whereas if you're largely doing really strong reporting and visualizations that tell a story and deliver business value, you're going to win and have a really good career all throughout. Those are, you know, positions that are largely needed and hugely available, as opposed to the data scientists that everybody believes, oh, well, if I go and do this thing with Bootcamp X, then Google will come knocking, or Facebook AI will come knocking, or somebody. And people are kind of foolhardy about that, where realistically, go and visualize really well, you'll have a great job.
Yeah, that's right. Like, one of our friends, you know, to the program, Joseph, he's been working on his data visualization chops, and he's basically doing a viz a day in Tableau. Mm-hmm. And some of his visuals now, like, you look at what he started with and what he has now, I'm like, man, just getting the reps in has been really good, you know, through experience, it's giving him that ability to hone his craft, right? But at the end of the day, it's a craft, right? You've got to put the time in. You can't learn anything instantly. If you could, you'd be a professional athlete making billions of dollars, right? So everyone needs to know it.
Or you'd be in the Matrix.
Yeah, that's right. But it takes time, right? So I think a lot of people want to take the shortcut, but at the end of the day, whatever job you do, you're a practitioner. And as a practitioner, you got to hone your craft, right?
Definitely.
You definitely have to put in the reps. If you're going to read one thing or look at one thing you've come across recently, let's maybe answer this from the perspective of someone younger in their career, whether it's a data scientist or data analyst or somebody more senior in their career. Any recommendations for either that junior or that senior person? This could be a book, a podcast, a course, or whatever.
Well, definitely your podcast for sure. I wouldn't get like overly bogged down with a specific language, but like looking at the kinds of things that are available, I'd pick up something like an introduction to statistical learning of some sort, like get your head wrapped around stats and maybe a little of Bayesian learning. And if you can start to understand that world a little more and you already have the math background, because if you don't, it's a little harder to really gain that knowledge. That's a really good crash course into a lot of the things that may be worthwhile for you to think of in the future. And then beyond that, like whether somebody chooses to do things in R, Python, or whatever, I mean, then it's chart your own path and kind of go down it, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. And like, and I think it's on your background too. Like if you're not super technical, maybe you don't want to do that kind of stuff. Like, you know, for the data science world, like I think everyone should learn stats and just, it's super helpful and it's going to help you in your job also. But there's some folks like that you could take the engineering route too, right? Where you're going in, you're less mathy and more like eng. So along with, if math isn't your jam, I think for the three of us, like math is our jam, so it's good. But if math isn't your jam, maybe you want to go down the engineering route if you come from more of a dev background and like looking into DevOps and, you know, maybe just setting up and learning, hunkering down and learning some AWS technology, right? So like, or some cloud tech and like just getting good at like productionizing. There's a ton of careers out there too in that. So I think it's where you come from, right? Like I was talking to someone the other day and they come from a risk and anti-money laundering background. And they're like, hey, I'm taking a data science course. I'm like, cool. Do you like coding? They're like, no. I'm like, what? it doesn't make sense that you want to do this. And they're like, well, I want to be able to create teams and talk to teams about what they're doing. And I was like, well, I don't know if you need to, I don't think you need to take a machine learning course to do that. Right. So maybe you need to just read about it a lot more in terms of, I'm not saying not to take it, but I'm saying like, if you don't like coding and that's something you've always struggled with, maybe that's not the path, but I think a lot of people see it. So I was like, maybe you need to learn more about AI strategy or get into more of like the strat stuff or do some basic analysis first. Don't go straight into ML. Sometimes I think it's just a big jump because that's what everyone's talking about, but you know, you need to run. You can't run before you walk, right? So I don't know. What do you think about that, Victor? Like, is that crazy? Like, should I be telling people this stuff? Like, I feel that this is not bad advice.
No, like, you know, it's smart advice. I mean, it's advice that you gain from having been in the field for a long enough time, right? So people are eager and want to jump in and think that, like, it's good that you think that you can do a lot of things and you can do everything. But at times you sort of need the foundation before you build the house, right? Yeah, so
that's right. I mean, do a visualization a day, right? See if you like that stuff. And then, but I mean, I think with machine learning and all this stuff, like the predictive side, it's like, you got to be able to ask the questions, right? And you can ask lots of really good questions while doing reports, while doing visualizations, and questions beget questions. And eventually you move into those type of predictive questions, but that doesn't mean you have to be there right now. You know, Dave, what about you? Like, what do you think? What's that starter or that kickoff for you?
Well, and so for that more junior person, I actually think getting just your critical thinking and skills as much as possible. So I'm going to recommend a different podcast than either of ours is Econ Talk. And it's been going on since like 2007. And they cover a lot of different spaces. They do a lot of, and certainly the word econ's in it. And it's actually a former economics professor, University of Chicago, classically trained type of economist, but he has lots of different guests, whether it's like Nassim Taleb or any of those types of guests that are on there covering a whole bunch of areas. And I think understanding more the problems that different people face, I think the more, and a part of it's like you get older, you get wiser, right? But you see a lot of the patterns, like a lot of things are so similar, like industry to industry, problem people like people problem, like these things are just over and over again. Doesn't matter your role, doesn't matter your domain. So I do think the more that you can fast track that and have that strong critical thinking skill that uses data as a component of it, the better you're going to be in your career. So for me, Econ Talk has been a good podcast to do that. But on a perspective of one thing with people with like very basic programming skills, there's a fast.ai that Jeremy Howard does. And he has stuff around deep learning. He has two deep learning courses and he has a basic machine learning one. Yeah. And fast.ai is a framework and it's also his he does research around this space.
Yeah, fast.ai is great. It's so easy to implement.
Yeah, it's so easy to implement. But the question is like, even like part of it's like, okay, start doing this stuff, start seeing if you like it and what the job is. And like, because I think sometimes people get so dissuaded because they can't get very far very quick. And it's like, well, if you're a programmer that's wanting to switch into, or at least somebody that's got some basic programming skills that wants to make that switch, fast.ai is great to give you exposure to say, now granted, like you can't just like set these things and like have no context around it. I know you have to go way beyond that to ever get any experience. And that's, again, like doing applied learning is really the only way you can really do it well, I think, like you guys do with your folks. So, but I do think it's an easy thing where I put people down to say, hey, given that background, this might be a good thing to do. You, let's check in once a month. Let's see how you're doing it. Let's find some real projects that you might be able to, like, find a nonprofit you can work with to help solve a problem. Now, oftentimes like deep learning, but you're not going to necessarily use, but you may be using some random forest to help a nonprofit in different capacities, for example.
Right, right. Cool. Like, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think just kicking it off, like it depends on the path, but really, like, I think critical thinking is really a huge component of it, and just how you need to be answering questions, and critical thinking really helps you get there. So I think that's a great, that's kind of spot on.
It's been a great discussion, and it's Friday afternoon and we have to get somewhere, right? But before we go, where can the Data Able audience find you, Jansen and Victor?
You can find us on LinkedIn, Jansen Sullivan, and Victor is Victor Anjos. So you can always find us there. You can find us on the All Things Data podcast. We're on Spot. Well, we're off Anchor, but you know, a lot of our folks come off on Spotify. And I think just parting thoughts, it's do things, get your hands dirty, find a project. And it doesn't have to be solving a problem, a huge problem of the world. If you want to do a visualization a day, that's doing something. If you want to go help a not-for-profit, you can, or if you just want to find what NBA team is going to win the finals this year, that's a great project too. But find something that you're passionate about, and it'll keep you motivated. If you're doing something you don't want, you'll never finish, you know?
Exactly. That's great advice. And I just got off the phone with someone, actually was saying, I was giving her advice for a visualization a week. Now I need to call her back and say every day.
Yeah, check it out. There's a challenge, but I can link you out to Joseph's Visa Day challenge. But I think a bunch of people are doing it, but it's been really insightful because I've been following it on LinkedIn.
Sounds good. Thank you. And Victor, how about you? Where do they find you? What's your...
I'm on LinkedIn, Victor Anjos, A-N-J-O-S. I'm on Twitter, not super active, but generally LinkedIn is probably the best place because it's very professional there. So.
And same here. It's funny how we're all just referencing LinkedIn now. And I guess it's the LinkedIn's cool. It's the TikTok professional. So I'm Dave Mathias, one with one as a number, because that's what was available for LinkedIn. And I'm Dave Mathias on Twitter, not Dave Mathias one. I was able to get the without one,
yes.
Although I'm not very active on it. So what does that say? But of course, gobeyondthedata.com is my company's website, and Data Able's on the most of the podcast catchers that are out there. Great talking with you guys today.
Yeah, no, it was great. Thanks. You know, thanks for asking us lots of questions, because usually it's just Vic and I asking each other questions. So it's good to have being on the other end of it.
Inquisitive minds, right?
That's so right.
Well, good chatting with you guys. We'll do it again.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Data Able. It was great to have you with us today, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Of course, if you did, love to have you share it with a friend. And of course, we can always value your positive reviews on iTunes or your favorite podcast catcher. So don't hesitate, go in there. It will help others learn about the value of Data Able. And if you want to learn more about me and what I do at Beyond the Data, then suggest you go to gobeyondthedata.com. And also make sure to check out our newsletter, where once or twice a month we're sharing data-driven insights that are also human-centered. Just go there, check out the newsletter, sign up, and like you say, you get it once or twice a month. Thank you and have a great day.